Thanks for tuning in to the feature story interviews for the Midwest Cattlemen as we look at our January 2025 feature story on virtual fences called A Life Without Fences, featuring Bryce Hundley.
Hello, Bryce.
Hello.
How are you today?
I'm good.
Can you hear me okay?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yep, just fine.
I'm sitting in the house. Hopefully I can maintain service here.
Oh, well, I kind of have the same issues, so we'll just work it the best we can. So let's go ahead and jump in, and congratulations on being named the Nyman Ranch Family Farm of the Year, first of all.
Thank you.
That's pretty cool. So let's start with a little background. How long have you been in beef cattle production?
Trying to think. I started my beef cow herd, in 04, I believe.
Okay. And what breed of cattle, or commercial, or what are you doing?
Pretty well all Angus. I started out by leasing cows from my neighbor. And he was in the bull selling business, and I wanted to get into the cow calf business. So I started leasing cows from him, and then I started out with 12 cows, and then so I did, had our split. So he would trade me back heifers for my bull. So
nice.
And then we just slowly expanded from there. I think. This was the I did buy when that guy had his complete dispersal this year. I did buy 5 of his cows, but other than that, I've raised every replacement on the farm from ours. So, and then buy bulls, of course. So.
So you're keeping it purebred, or are you doing registration, or?
No registration.
Okay.
I guess you'd say a commercial.
Commercial Black Angus then?
Yeah.
Okay. So I would contend, having been raised in the country with animals, that cattle, goats, and sheep all are notorious for finding weak spots in a fence. So what on earth made you believe that no fence at all would be possible to contain wanderers?
Well, I guess I did a couple of no fence field days. We've had goats since we started with the cattle, as well, running in two separate, where fences allowed for the goats, physical fences. And then we used a lot of net fence, as well, but, I suppose. Trying to think how many years back it was that I heard about virtual fence, and I thought, you know what, if I get a chance to do that, I'm gonna try. So I reached out to him, and I had talked to the company reps, actually. Trying to remember if some of the company reps from Norway were here to the North American Stock Show, I think down in Texas, and they came up and brought some collars with them to demonstrate. I think that was in the spring of I think that was in the very spring of 22, and we received our first collars. Trying to think, it was Thanksgiving of 22. So,
okay.
sheep and goat collars. Yeah. Now I did get the cattle ones, more in the middle of the winter then. So.
Okay.
But,
so
yeah,
that was,
I thought.
So
The I
next
thought it was
question.
Worth,
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I thought it was worth giving it a try, especially on their pilot program, because, you had a year to try them, and then you could return them if they didn't work for you. So, I mean, kind of a no win or no lose situation, I thought, on
okay.
that. So.
So that's kind of what I wanted to know, too, is how you connected with them, the product and the technology, and how you became a pilot program, because you said you reached out to them. Did they have that kind of program in place already with other producers, or did you kind of initiate that relationship?
I initiated, I think. I mean, I had sent an emails to the company. And I mean, I remember getting up at like, I think it was five one morning to talk to one of the, I think it was one of the heads of the company in Norway. So our, you know, time zones matched up. So.
And so they were not doing this with anybody prior to you about just, you know, having that kind of year trial or anything?
No, they did. I mean, I had expressed interest basically a year before the pilot program started. So I think they had, you know, they kept a list of people that were interested. And then when the pilot program, when they were approved for trial use in the U.S., I was on the list, I guess you'd say.
Okay.
I asked if I wanted to be a pilot participant. So, and the one reason, you know, I know there's other systems out there. I did have conversations with Vince, and I had been inquiring or trying to do some research on the one out of Australia. At the time, it was Agerson's, I think, and then Gallagher purchased it. You know, I thought that the one out of Australia had the only one that had sheep and goat collars was, and we, in the meantime, between, say, 04 and the present day, we had started a sheep flock as well. So to me, they were the only one that had a sheep and goat collar. And to me, in our part of the world, that lended us the most room for expansion by using the sheep and goat ones. And then I don't even have my whole beef herd with collars. I currently have 20. So we're not in, I guess what you would say, typical cow-calf area or land. It's mainly crop ground. But it's rolling, so we have terraces, we have waterways, we have headlands. We don't, frankly, plant. I don't know if I'm going to have any alfalfa hay next year. So I've got basically a 50, 65 head cow herd, and I'm not going to need any supplemental alfalfa hay just on account of what we make off waterways and stuff. So, which the you know, waterways and headlands for conservation have to be there anyway. So to me, it's a win-win where I don't, you know, basically dad and my own waterways, you get it. There's no land cost, I guess. There is, but there's.
Okay, that makes sense. So tell me about your experience, and let's focus mostly on the cattle because we're a beef cattle production magazine. But I know that your experience involves the sheep and goats, and that will be helpful too. But what about the good, the bad, the learning curve, in particular with the cattle?
Okay. With the cattle, I break it down, and you know, people have asked before too. I would say that my quote or my phrase is that for cattle, I would classify it as strictly at the current level of technology and results. I would say that it is a rotational grazing tool.
Okay.
Because you know, cattle, we had had some problems with some battery issues on the cattle collars, they're losing connection. We've got that solved now. We haven't used them as much as we have the sheep and goat ones. So, you know, you are going to have some that lose connection, where, you know, they're not going to be getting the audio and the electric shocks. So it with that's why I qualify it as I have run, like sheep and goats. I have run, I had 45 in the pilot program and I bought another 50. So we've got, I think, around 90, you know, 95 sheep and goat collars. And I have run them other than, you know, for containment for changing batteries and stuff like that. I have run no physical fence for the sheep and goats for going on 2 years. But the difference is that the flocking instinct of the sheep and goats is so much tighter.
Yes.
You know, they know where they're at on the food chain. But they, you know, if one gets out, like for example, I run them out on corn stalks, and if there's, you can tell whose battery needs changed because they'll get 100 yards farther from the flock, you know, than the main group, but they always come back because they don't spread out like cattle. That's where, you know, with cattle, one way or the other, you need some type of fence, either electric fence or, you know, if your cattle are trained to regular electric fence or, you know, 5-strand barbed wire, physical fence. You need that just for the safety sake of, you know, we live along a lot of highways here. I would not feel comfortable counting on no fence collars, you know, a virtual fence to strictly contain my animals. One, you know, in the physical fence, it's great. They, you know, you can, like, say, for example, now, we have cows running out on corn stalks. You can, you know, instead of you turning them out on a corn stalk field and the first 2 weeks, they just go and eat all the corn.
Mm-hmm.
You can advance their boundary, you know, how many hundred yards at a time or how many acres at a time, you know, say every week. And, you know, you don't need a back fence like you would say for rotational grazing, but you just give them more every, like say from the water source, give them more every week, and you can stretch your corn stalks or your, you know, stockpile forage much, much longer. So, and, you know, keeping them in a more balanced diet versus, you know, gorging on all the corn and then all the good grass and then not having anything in a month. So sure. Just down to the corn husk and stuff. So
well, that makes a lot of sense. And as you said from the outset, that it's about controlled grazing, not necessarily boundary fencing that you're utilizing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what's the follow-up with the pilot program, either for their sake as a company that has initiated that, or for yourself in collecting feedback and data to determine the success of the product and how it's benefiting or costing your program?
I mean,
are you doing any kind of data collection on their behalf, successful, and what kind of feedback are you, you know, maybe looking for yourself to determine whether you need to expand this program or it's working or not working?
I'd say it's working. I mean, I do have some, I like with the some of the battery issues. They had a batch of batteries for the cattle collars that would give a over or under voltage situation, and then it would just for internal of the collar, and then it would basically lock it up. So then it was not reporting. We gave feedback on that. They sent a new batch of batteries, and that solved it. I've hosted 2 field days, I think it is, talking about the product out here, and you know, gave them my feedback on that. Like say for example, what I mean, there's been some requests that I've had. Like, currently the only way to input coordinates to the app, it's all basically controlled on your phone or a desktop. You can access a little bit more data and save it on the desktop version. I really never use that for much. The only way to, like I said, input new coordinates is on your phone,
mm-hmm.
Which is good, but it's also, it can be a negative. Like the place where we had everything fenced and cross fenced with electric fence before, getting the no-fence collars. There was only one pasture that I was continuously grazing, mainly because it had a large creek running through it, very, very hilly, hard to, you know, hard to fence. So that's where I'm going to use it. But also, it also borders a farm that we purchased a couple of years ago. Are you from Iowa? Or from
no, Iowa? Missouri.
Missouri. Okay, uh-huh. I don't know if you're familiar. I don't know if you're familiar with, like, say, the one of the programs up here that NRCS offers is, it's called CP Conservation Practice 21, where you enroll areas along creeks, basically to make it easier to farm, I should say. It protects both the stream and makes basically farming easier, so you're not, you know, going in and out of the bends of the creek. So, for example, this farm, there's 9 acres of CRP on the border of the creek, but there's also 15 acres that was, you know, not previously farmed, so it could not be enrolled. And this piece of grass and CRP borders our current pasture. So my hope for next year is to program the collars so that I can run those cattle. Program those collars so that I can run the cattle on that 15 acres and make use of that ground and keep them out of the CRP, you know, so I can make better use of the, because, you know, the problem is there's a little, you know, say 2 acre piece of CRP here, another 3 acres on the other side, you know, go down the creek, there's another 3 acres. It's basically what I guess I consider not able to be feasibly fenced, even with electric fence. So that was my hope, is to be able to program these collars to keep them out of the CRP, but into the grass that's not enrolled.
Okay.
So, I mean, you know, there's 15 acres that I'm just, you know, we can grow some, you know, especially on a creek, we can grow some pretty good grass, you know, if we have access to water. But, you know, also you don't want to continuously graze the creek. You want to, you know, get them in there, let them eat it, and then advance them so that you're not having stream bank destruction and, you know, sloughing off and stuff like that. So that was for basically, you know, 2 or 3 benefits, using land that I'm not currently using, that I, you know, that we paid for and own, but also doing it in an environmentally sensitive way.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. And it does sound like it would be pretty difficult to utilize for grazing otherwise.
Yeah. Yeah. That was my hope. Something else I was trying to think. You know, we have had some, there's the biggest issue currently with that is that the only way to, yeah, that's what I was getting off on track here. The only way to input data or the new coordinates is on your phone. I have made a request to them and they say that it's coming, and I'm hoping it's for next year. That, so I, you know, I received the coordinates from FSA. It's called a shape file that gives the GPS coordinates for where the CRP starts and ends. And currently there's no real great way to input that into the app. You know, my request to them was to be able to, you know, they download that file somehow to the app, so that the solution, if I had gotten that far this year, the solution that I had come up with was that I would send that file to one of the guys that does soil sampling, where they've got a whole receiver and computer on their four-wheeler, and basically put it in there, and then he would have to drive it while I sat on the back and hit the coordinates on my phone as we drove.
Hey, so, well, you're a thinker, I can tell. you're trying to figure it out. You're kind of an innovative type of person, I'm gathering. You've tried other new things on the farm too, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, this, I've always, I don't know, for some reason, you know, grazing and grazing animals is interesting to me. So you know, especially, you know, ruminant animals. There's so much, how should you say, there's so much wasted feed in this part of the world, basically for lack of fencing, you know, with heavy cropping areas, but, you know, also, like I said, mixed with some grass. It's, that's kind of the reason that I got into the cow-calf business, because it's like I saw an opportunity, you know, to be able to carve out a farming spot or a niche or whatever with the cattle, and be able to use that, you know, especially if we have an open winter. So
yeah, and you can get those.
Yeah. So, you know, so great, like I said, grazing has always been interesting to me. And we raise Nyman Ranch pigs too. So, and we have pigs in buildings, but, raising pigs the Nyman way, you know, there's a lot of equipment that translates over to both operations. So it, you know, hopefully can save money or, be more efficient, I guess you'd say.
Okay. So, on a daily use, like, what did you learn from the technology when you were using it on the goats and sheep that thought that it would be a workable solution for the cattle? When we talked about the differences between those animals, what was it that was working that you thought, well, I think the cows would work too?
Just that the goats and the sheep, they very, very quickly, you know, over the course of, say, probably 3 or 4 days, they very quickly learned how to associate the sound with the tones on the collar, with the fact that, you know, as the tone went up, there's a possibility that you're going to get a shock. So, I mean, that was the main thing, is that, and then the cattle learn quickly too, that, you know, when you hear that higher tone, you better probably turn around. You know, it's like any electric fence. It only works when you're walking up to it, type of thing, versus, you know, running 100 mile an hour.
Right.
But that's any fences.
Did you have to do anything differently to accustom the cattle to those collars, or train them differently when you first put the collars on?
No, you just you know, say do the recommended procedure, put the collars on, let them get used to them for a couple of days, and then basically a dry lot situation where you have physical fence all the way around it, and you, I guess you'd say, you cross fence it with the virtual fence in one draw a line across it, so that they can't go anywhere if they do get through. But over the course of, say, 3, 4, 5 days, they associate the tone and the shocks with, you know, what they mean. So now the training is basically the same for sheep and goats as it is for cattle.
Okay. So have you determined that there are some rebels in the herd, though, that, you know, this just doesn't work for that one in particular?
No.
That's good.
Sheep and goats, goats are probably the easiest, because their hair is so short. Sheep are a little harder, just getting a fit. I mean, after you shear, it's fine. But, you know, if anybody grows, you need to loosen it up. Like one, for example, I had one animal get, a sheep get 76 shocks one day. Well, that anything over 6 in a day is an adjustment issue of the collar. There is, if they're properly adjusted, you really don't have, you know, you will have some that escape, but sheep and goats, they go right back.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times it's because the collar probably needs to be tightened up a link or two on the chain to make this proper chain to skin contact. So
what kind of maintenance do you have to do for the collars?
Sheep and goat, they're more, The battery changes on those are more often, depending on your service, how tight your borders are. A battery on the new generation collar probably lasts 2 or 3 months. The tighter you, like on the cattle too, the tighter that you have your boundaries. Basically, when the collar approaches a boundary, it has to, what I say, wake up.
Yeah.
And it uses more power. The cattle ones, there's the solar panels on the sides of those. Have you know they can maintain. I think when we took them off this year, the lowest we had was like 80%. So, as far as battery issues or changing out batteries on cattle, you should easily make it through the grazing season, say the summer grazing season, with the collar without having to do a change. One of the negatives is, and I think they said it's coming too, you can remove a pasture over Bluetooth, but you can't, currently you can't add a pasture, change pasture over Bluetooth. It has to go through the cellular network. So that's where, if you're in an area of poor service, they say, like you said, they say that it's coming, the ability to do that. So,
what about the adaptability for size and allowing for growth when you're talking about cattle? You're using them on only mature cattle, right?
Correct, and that's where say you were a stocker or a backgrounder. I guess I would say that if you're going to use collars, you still need some type of corralling or penning system to be able to get them in to, like, say, adjust up or down depending on the growth of the cattle. If you have, say you had a cattle one that lost connection, and you wanted it to be functioning, you'd have to get it in and do a restart on it. So I know that they've said that they are working on Bluetooth. If you can get within Bluetooth range, you can restart. But sometimes they don't show up on Bluetooth. Like maybe there's an issue where you have to do a physical restart. So that's where getting them in the corral and running them through the chute and the head gate is probably going to be necessary.
So it's would you then say that it's not as practical for the young cows, calves, as it would be for a mature cow herd? And what about those that have calves on their side? What is it even doable for that?
I mean, yeah, I run collars on cows that have calves at the side, but you just got to understand that calf has, if you're, and that can be one of the benefits, you know, we've talked about this at the field days too, is that you basically have a, what I would say is a quote unquote built-in creep area where, mm-hmm. you know, the calves will be with the cows, but with them not having collars, like say you already had your pasture. And sometimes, you know, calves can be tough to contain with, you know, a strand of poly wire or regular wire. So if you pulled all that out and just strictly had collars on the cows, that allows, and the cows can only go to this spot, but that allows the calves to go ahead and basically pre-graze or get ahead of the cows and get the better grass. And then, you know, the cows come up later when you advance the virtual boundary. So it can be a positive.
Okay.
So
that makes I'm sense. Saying,
like with stocker and, you know, backgrounding cattle, you know, you can do it, but you just may have to come to the understanding that, say, I don't know what it would be, how fast they're growing, but say once a month, once every 2 months, you're probably going to have to get them in and maybe, you know, maybe loosen them up. So,
we talked a little bit about the Bluetooth, but you can see on the app whether they're working, if the batteries are charged, if an animal has gone past the boundary line. All of that is detectable with the app, correct?
Yes. You can see where they've been. You can go to each collar individually, see how many warnings they've gotten, how many shocks they've gotten. They're supposed to check in with the app every 15 minutes, so it'll put a dot on the map. You can where the collars have checked in. Like on sheep and goats, for example, when you notice one that isn't with the flock, you'd better go check it. I had a problem with some pregnancy toxemia in some of my sheep, mainly for the fact that they had a huge farm that they could be out on, and they were, I don't know how the best way to describe it, but they were overweight because they had, you know, had gotten so much corn to eat that they were in such good body condition that ends up that, you know, they couldn't, they started getting toxemia. So that gave me a warning to go over there and get them and treat those couple that were suffering from that. So, you know, if I didn't have that, maybe wouldn't have noticed it.
Okay.
You can, there's a lot of data that you can look at on the app.
So, you mentioned earlier that pretty much you're using them just for the summer grazing. And then you pull them off
on the cattle.
Mm-hmm.
On the cattle, the sheep and goats has been year round.
Okay.
Pending snow, you know. The example, and this is where I know that you're a cattle magazine, but at the field day, one of the things that I really tried to express to, you know, some of the attendees is that, you know, I understand that you're a cattle person, but so I went down to the Southwest Missouri Forage Conference and spoke down there on behalf of No Fence, you know. And what really struck me when I walked through the hallway is that the two biggest booths at that conference were basically the equipment manufacturer for rough cutting and the chemical company for brush and weed control. And like I told those people, I says, you know, instead of you spending money on those things, spending money and getting no return or it, you know, being a cost to you, I really want you to think about and say you have a brush or a browse problem. You know, if you could invest in, say, I don't know how many ever goats it would take to eat it down, you know, you could make money on those goats and have them do the control, the vegetation control, versus you know, going and pulling out the trees or the brush or the multiple rows, you know, have them do it and make money on the thing. And like, say you have a vegetative, like a weed problem, you know, that's where maybe sheep could come in. I know that they've talked about using sheep out in South Dakota for leafy spurge and getting that under control with sheep, you know, using animals as targeted grazing, using less chemical. And I know Nebraska, and some people would contend on this, but Nebraska has done a study that theoretically they contend that you can add one sheep or one goat, depending on what you're after, per one cow and not affect the carrying capacity of that pasture, because the goats and the sheep eat different species, plant species than the cattle do.
Oh, wow. That's so cool sounding. Different strokes for different goats.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think if you have an open mind where, you know, you say to yourself, yeah, I'm a cattleman, but, you know, is there money to be made, and is there a better way to do this? If you have an open mind, I think there is. And, you know, everybody says, well, I don't have fences for sheep and goats. Well, if you invested in these, everybody has fences for them. Like I told you before, the sheep and goats are especially easy to contain with this virtual fence, just because their flocking instinct is so tight, and they don't want to get away from the group. So,
sounds like there's a lot of synergy and possibilities then for people that are looking for solutions. This is just a lot more opportunity for them to attack those problems. What really is the cost, though?
As far as what?
Like
The collar?
The collar, the technology, like, do you have a per head cost, or how are you calculating the cost?
Yeah, let me look it up here. I can get on the app, and if you go to the if you go to the app, or you can go to the online, let me see here. Yeah, I can go to the store. And you're okay, so there is an individual cost for each collar. Like currently right now I'm looking at the store. A complete cattle collar is $289. A sheep and goat collar is $199. And then there's, you know, you can buy spare batteries. You do need to buy some wall chargers, and that. And then there is a subscription. And the subscription fee is basically for the app and for the management of the collars. That does get cheaper the more collars that you have. They used to have it as either a yearly or 6 month subscription. Now it's monthly. So like say you don't want to use the collars over the winter, you pull the batteries and you know you're not getting charged. You're not getting charged a service fee on you're only getting charged the service fees on the ones that you're currently using. So that's good.
And then you just kind of have to then gear all that back up when you start using them or something again.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So what are your fellow farmers in the area think of your setup? And are they curious? Are they envious? Are they critical? Maybe they're all of the above.
I don't know everybody. I guess everybody's got different opinions. You know, there's just not very many cow-calf people around here. You know, I think we have had locals come to the field days and, you know, they've expressed interest. A lot of it is mindset stuff. You know, I don't think they're going to, you know, and I'll be the first to admit, if you have an area that you could subdivide, say, with polywire or something like that, temporary electric fence, you probably could do it cheaper that way on your pastures. And, you know, if you wanted to take the time, you could do it in your crop fields. But, you know, everybody's tied to labor and time. So that's where, you know, and like I told you about, like our pasture is the one pasture that's basically, I guess I'd say, not feasible to be subdivided to keep them out of the CRP. You know, this kind of to me was the only option that I could see to work. So on the cattle, the example that I give people, you know, as far as the sheep and goats go, I have probably two, if not three, people, a waiting list of people that want animals next year to eat some areas down. Currently, I know there's businesses that do it. Currently, I don't charge for that. I kind of figure, you know, well, I've got one set of goats that I've 2 years now I've taken to people. They change batteries, they water them, they watch them. And I drop them off in the, you know, early summer and pick them up in the fall. And yeah, basically they watch my animals all year, all summer. And I don't have to look at them. I mean, there's with the sheep and goats, there's people that want their groves ate down. They want their acreages eaten down. Two people I've taken animals to. Well, one of them was that they had finally settled the estate for their family farm, and they wanted, you know, there was a ton of buried wire, buried machinery, you know, late summer, they can't find it all, you know, and they don't want to take a mower through there. Well, I wouldn't want to either, you know, or a skid loader and popping tires and stuff like that. So that they said, hey, can you bring those goats up and have them eaten down so we can start, you know, they can get things exposed and the wire exposed so we can get stuff cleaned up. And I said, yeah, sounds good. So I took them up there and the goats ate it down. There's another old abandoned feed yard around here, 2 miles away from my house. I take 50 head of sheep over there the last two summers. They eat it down, and I pick them up in the fall. So
very, very smart, and it sounds like people are understanding the management and benefit of that.
Yeah.
So hey, that's cool.
The example that I give on the sheep and goats, granted we had a blizzard, so say from would have been March of 23 to March of 24, I was running 45 collars on sheep and goats, mixed sheep and goats. In that, granted, it was a fairly open winter except for the major blizzard we have. I had in the beginning of January, I think it was. I forget the exact date. But in that one-year time span, I fed exactly one round bale of grass hay to that set of animals the entire year. That was the only stored feed that I gave them in 1 year. So people look at the cost of the collar and say, boy, that's expensive. And I said, yeah, and I have, you know, management and maintenance on the collars and changing batteries and stuff. But that was no investment in any physical fence, just running out on either winter or fall rye, cover crop, you know, acreages in the summer or pastures in the summer, and corn stalks in the fall and winter. So if I did my math right, depending on your hay price that you use, I figured loosely that I paid for those sheep and goat collars in 1 year in hay savings alone, based on what the usual management of sheep and goats in this part of the world would be, because most of them, you know, have overgrazed permanent pastures that are full of worms. And that's another benefit that, especially with the sheep and goats that we've seen, you know, sheep and goats are very susceptible to parasites, and our worm issues are little to none. Our foot rot issues are now little to none. Like I said, the biggest problem I had was getting some of my ewes in an over-conditioned state, and they had some toxemia issues for being too conditioned. But other than that, the health benefits of having them out on the land versus locked in a dry lot situation, that's worth a lot of money too, not having to have health problems with the animals.
Okay. Okay, is there anything that we haven't really talked about that you want?
I mean, whatever questions you got, you ask me.
Okay. How about this one? Do you think this is a kind of technology that is going to catch on with the masses? Or do you think it's going to be pretty selective?
I think it'll, you know, like anything else, some people are slower than others to adapt, you know, to adopt technology. You know, combine yield monitors, they took a while, you know, and GPS technology for planting and stuff like that. That took however long, you know, 10, 15, 20 years. But, you know, most of the bugs are worked out now. And I'd say that for the most part, the vast majority of, say, row crop farmers are, you know, open to the idea of GPS technology, just because they can, you know, save you money, make you more efficient, using less seed. I mean, we have the amount of seed that we saved on our planter by having, you know, rope clutch shutoffs is easily paid for that. So, I mean, I think if you're in the cattle business and you you know, are trying to be, you know, you have to be everybody that's in. You and I both know that there's not a lot of margin in the cow calf business, so it's good to think of ways that you can be a better manager and save feed, because the biggest mark of profitability in the cow calf business is, in the end, still is basically how much stored feed that you feed over the year. So if you can do a better job of managing your pastures, or possibly open yourself up to some new grazing areas that you weren't able to use before, I think they'll be a it'll be a good thing.